Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. One of my favorite segments of the week is when we spend time with folks working with NOLA Coalition, difference makers in our community, down in the trenches, doing a lot of the hard work. You never hear about a lot of these folks, and that's what I enjoy so much is how much I learn of what is actually going on. And today's no different. We are joined by Carolina Guadalupe, creative design director for Trinity City Arts and sponsors of the Artivist Awards. And Caroline is the creative design director for the Trinity City Arts. And she's a New Orleans native, a designer artist holding a professional Bachelor of Architecture degree, and has over 25 years of experience infusing creativity, I might be a challenge for her, and functionality into projects across multiple industries. Since June of 2022, Carolina has been collaborating with Trinity City Arts as a graphic artist, educator, and administrator. We also have Jennifer Mama Jen Turner. We're trying to hook up with Mama Jen right now. She is one of the three 2025 Artivist of the Year awardees. But in the meantime, we'll talk with Carolina. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's exciting to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. So if you would, for the benefit of the audience, what are the Artivist Awards? And what is Artivist?
Artivist. Okay. So an artivist is an artist who uses their art along with their activism to promote change within their community. So last night, we had the honor of honoring three artivists in our community that are doing work alongside with their art. They're doing activist work alongside with their art, and their art is a form of activism. And that is what we celebrate. That is, as an organization, that's we promote social change through artivism. And we do that through a comic book that we created called Trinity City. It's an Afrofuturistic story set in New Orleans in 2078, after New Orleans has suffered a climate-induced flood. And we work with young Black artists and professionals who mentor these young artists. And they are the ones who created Trinity City Universe. They are the ones who created the three main characters that go through an adventure in this new New Orleans in the future. We use that to go into schools to form young artivist clubs, because we are hoping to inspire the next generation of artivists. And we do that every year. We do a fundraiser, and we hope to inspire our young artists who were there last night by introducing them to artivists within their communities. And so last night, as you mentioned, Mama Jen Turner, from Community Bookstore Center and a Black literary wise person. She was one of our honorees. And then our next honoree was Monique Verdan. She is a Homa Nation citizen and an artist and a land steward. And we also celebrated Sierra Chenier, which is a young historian and storyteller from New Orleans. It was a beautiful night last night celebrating these amazing women and
artists. So last night was the Home Fest celebration?
So last night was the Artivist Awards at Beanlandia.
Oh, okay.
And then Home Fest happened preceding the weekend. Like, the Home Fest was Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, which just culminated last night at the Artivist Awards.
If you would, what kind of reaction do you get from the kids when you go into the schools and you present what it is that y'all do?
Thank you. That's a great question, because I'm the one who gets the privilege to go into classrooms. I'm also privileged enough to be able to have really challenging conversations with our young people. And what I've learned from these experiences is that our young people they have the desire to have these larger conversations about issues that are affecting themselves, their families, and their communities. And that's what I have the privilege of doing in classrooms, because we challenge them and we say, art is powerful. Your artivism is powerful. If you combine these two things, you can really enact change. You can influence within your own communities. And a lot of the young people that we work with in the beginning, they shy at the idea because they don't see themselves as artists. And they walk out becoming artivists. And they understand how powerful, like, they understand that if they create this image or they create this poetry, or in one case, a group of them created a skit and wrote out the whole skit and performed it. And so the idea is to understand that art and artivism in general is a powerful tool, and we want to teach you that skill so that you can use it the rest of your life. Just this summer, we had a great partnership with NOYA, the New Orleans Youth Alliance, and the one artivist that came out of the program, when he walked in, he says to me, he's like, I'm not an artist. He's like, I'm in finance. He's like, I'm going to college for finance. Like, that's what I want to do. And he walked out an artivist. He created a video. He created a slideshow. And it was beautiful to watch the transformation.
I love hearing these stories. And I've had similar experiences in talking to young kids in schools. And a little bit of frustration that they fail to recognize just how unique their talent is. And whether they're going to go in finance or some other walk of life, it's always important to be as broad as one can be, right? And when you think about art and you think about music, and really I was more touched with in the context of music, it's just another way of expressing oneself, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I was listening to you recite my little bio, and I'm hearing the question, and I realize, you know, the things are all interconnected, right? Because with a degree in architecture, I find myself now, more than 20 years later, this is the work I'm doing, and this is such fulfilling work. And it's just as powerful in a sense of collaboration, right? So when you do design work on a level of architecture, it's huge levels of collaboration. The same thing happens on the community level, right? We're going into classrooms, but yet we have all of these champions within school systems, within organizations like NOYA, who I mentioned earlier. And so it's a real community effort. Last night was a community effort. That celebration is acknowledging that we have artists that are doing amazing, incredible work in our communities. And we should uplift them now while they're still young and vibrant and doing the work.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I used to tell kids in the music programs that I actually sponsored when I was sheriff is that less than 2% of the people in the world can actually play an instrument, and less than 1% of them can play an instrument and actually walk with that instrument. I said, when you look at things in that context, and I'm sure that there are similar numbers as it relates to artists, you know, when you look at it in that context, if you think about it for a moment, I mean, not to not be humble, but you are incredibly special. I mean, you are blessed with a talent that other people like myself envy. And that's why I made the little joke about you infusing creativity into me. It would be really difficult for anyone to do so. But the fact of the matter is that it's just amazing that we don't. And I don't know why. I just can't figure out why it is. Maybe our teachers or our experiences that we're not setting aside enough time to let children know just how special they truly are.
I agree with that. You know, as an organization, we tell our, when we go into the classroom, we tell our students that we're going to teach them how to do narrative change. And the example that we give them for the narrative change work that we as an organization are doing is the comic book. So what we say is, like, you've heard this saying, it's an awful, in our opinion, awful negative saying that children should only be seen and not heard, right? We mm-hmm. challenge that saying. We don't believe in that. We want to change that narrative. We believe that children must be seen and heard. And the way that we do that is that we've empowered young children to create this comic. We've empowered them to illustrate it. We've empowered them to create the characters, to infuse the issues that they are dealing with. And that, for us, is flipping the narrative, because now we have this incredible, beautiful product that we share in our community to young people that challenges that notion that absolutely children should be seen and heard. They are precious and they have amazing ideas, and we should be encouraging them to think of the future, to begin coming up with ways to live in a world where New Orleans is underwater. Like, we know that's our future. This is powerful work. Like, I really get excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what can the community look forward to relative to your organization, Trinity City Arts, coming up in 2026?
Well, first things first, we are in the works of finishing issue two. So we have issue one is currently available. You can go to our website, trinitycitycomics.org, and you can download the comic book for free right now as we're on the phone. And then over the summer, we worked with three young illustrators that we've encountered through all of our workings, and they were hired to illustrate issue two, and we're in the middle of finishing that. And so hopefully at the beginning of the year, that's what we're going to be celebrating. So look out for that. You can follow us on all the socials at Trinity City Arts. And we also have a coloring book. We had one of our young artists, Relina, got a grant from the city, and she hired other young artists that are working within our program still, and they created a coloring book called Water, Wonderful World. And it's a coloring book for, you know, younger children, but it's created, all illustrated, all designed by our young artivists. And that's also available for a free download on our website as well. And I highly recommend educators to look at these documents and download them and see if you could use them in your classroom, because that's really what we created, is tools for parents and for educators to use.
And I love that you use the medium of a comic book, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so connected to childhood. And for many of us, we think comic books are dead, but they're not.
Not at all. It's gotten such a great, like, I don't think we realized how powerful of a tool we were creating when we were in the middle of creating it. And it isn't until now that we have it in physical form that the organization really has boomed in a way that I don't think we could have imagined. So we're really grateful to all the artists who are part of creating Trinity City Universe. And we're hoping to be able to at least create four issues. We would like it to continue, but that's our immediate goal. So if anyone, you know, last night was our fundraiser and we had a great time and we did raise lots of funds, but we're always looking for people to invest in our work and invest in our young people.
And if they would like to do so, where would they go?
Our website, trinitycitycomics.org. And you can also just go to any of our social media accounts on Instagram, X, and Facebook. It's Trinity City Arts.
Carolina Guadalupe, Creative Design Director for Trinity City Arts, thank you so much for joining us. We truly appreciate it. Keep up the great work. All right, folks, we will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We have some free time in the back half of this hour. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a shout. We can talk about any issue that's on your mind. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're going to go to the talk lines. Let's go to Rocco. Rocco, you're up. What say you?
It's been a bad day. I got a wife in the University Hospital and a son in another institution, so it ain't going good. But I got to preach right now. Remember the $15 billion Purdue payout for OxyContin abusers and all that the state was going to save the world with? You're going to give the money to the state. When's the last person you know that the state rehabilitated? It might be me in 63. And it's sad. I mean, come on. Where the money? $15 million.
I don't know. I mean, I will try to find out.
No.
Where that stands.
I want to give you a little instrument, though. I have a son, a bunch of degrees, but a musician. God, wasn't no saint. Got his finger cut, 6 months legit, OxyContin. Now, from them, he cost me $500,000. I caught about $100,000. He's throwing a bunch of care. Point is, I can't sue individually, but yet they gave out $15 billion, and it cost me from my heart. And I'm a poor man who drove a United Care for 50 years. And I hate to be putting my business on the street. But why are these Morris Barts not jumping after that? And that's where I get the phoniness on both sides, right, left. Green. I'm the love generation, and I like rock and roll like you.
Right.
In all concerts.
I understand your frustration that, you know, we need to self-police healthcare providers everything. To make sure that they're doing the right thing and they need to be held accountable. There's study after study of overprescribing opioids for pain, and we've seen all the documentaries and everything that's out there that memorialize exactly why we find ourselves in the predicament that we find ourselves in today, you know, to include the unsavory conduct of Purdue, and you know, and it's a shame. And it's an incredibly addictive drug, as you well know. You probably know better than most. You know, and having to deal with the challenges.
And the aftermath, because it goes from meth to heroin into everything else.
No
then
doubt.
You really out. Then it goes to the mental wards. You know, it's just, you know, I'm screaming because I think I have a legit beef. If I got to go to New York City to find me a lawyer, I feel like I got a beef. $15 billion. You go around the world 300 times with dollar bills. Not that much, but you know what I'm talking about.
I understand your frustration, and it's okay that you call
it
and vent, Rocco, and try to have a blessed day and good luck to both of your family members that are being treated right now. And we'll keep you in our prayers. Let's go to Walter. Walter, you're up. What say you?
Thank you, Neil. Good morning. You know, Neil, with the election that's about to go down in New York City with this socialist getting in there, their business is leaving New York like there's no tomorrow. They're going to places like Tennessee, Florida, Texas, of course. New Orleans, downtown New Orleans, has a high-rise vacancy rate of around 35 to 40%. There should be a committee formed with the new mayor here to try and get some of these businesses that are leaving New York City and offer them some high-rise office space deals with the owners of these buildings. For example, the old Shell Square building, which is now Whitney, it's going to be 40 to 45% unoccupied by the end of the year. Deals could be made. You know, when I started my business 40 years ago and I needed factories, I went to Europe to find the factories, and I did, and was very successful doing so. But it takes a little bit of effort on the part of people who would be interested in getting some of these businesses from New York to come here. We have a new mayor coming in, thank God, and I think something like this would work to fill those vacancies and those high-rises.
I agree with you. I say often, things don't just happen. You have to make them happen. And, you know, doing like what you did and going to Europe is what is required of us to be able to put our best foot forward, sell ourselves. And it's very competitive out there. And I also agree with you that if Mondami gets elected, I think a lot of businesses are going to be looking at relocating. And New Orleans would be a great place. It's certainly a lot cheaper than New York. Right.
There's no two ways about it. And it wouldn't take that much of an effort to put together a committee. Heck, I'm 80 years old. I'll be the leader. If I found seven factories in eight countries to supply me 45 years ago, going to New York City to secure these potential businesses, and you'd have to make a deal with the property owners, you know, maybe give them 2 years free rent. But some of these properties to get some big businesses in there would do it.
Yeah. You're going to love this saying that an old friend of mine who recently passed used to say about New York. He loved New York City. He said, but you know, Newell, the problem in New York is it's cheaper to eat money there.
I've heard that before, Newell. Anyhow, that's my 2 cents. Come on, new mayor, get up there and do something.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Walter. We really appreciate you calling in. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. I was reading an interesting article the other day about this con game that's going on in a number of big cities as it relates to luxury apartments. And the article focuses on this phenomenon in Atlanta because there's a huge luxury rental unit glut and the shortage of affordable housing in Atlanta. Some very similar circumstances that we have here in New Orleans. So the average rent for a two-bedroom apartment in Atlanta is about $2,000 a month on average, right? Which is mostly above what a typical renter in the city can afford, you know, if you think about it. So what's happening is that on TikTok and other social media, they're putting out these promoters are selling fake rental application packages, which include doctored financial documents, fake social security numbers, false employment letters, right? And utilizing a number that is referred to as a credit profile number that's attached to what is a near perfect credit score. They're selling these packages for about $1,250 a piece. So you get this whole package and you walk into these places that you want to rent, some of which are doing manual background checks instead of utilizing services that are out there on the internet. A lot of this is AI generated. So this is another AI generated scam, right? And you've got people that have been evicted multiple times. They might have a credit score at 500 or less, typically wouldn't be eligible to move into these luxury apartment units. What you're going to be shocked to hear is that nationally, three quarters of apartment owners report that on average, 40% increase in rental application and payment fraud last year compared with 2023. A 40% increase. What they what they're finding is in some units, half of the people that live there are there as a result of fraud. Others are saying that entire buildings, everyone, every tenant is fraudulently there because they doctored their financials, they doctored a Social Security number, they doctored all kinds of different things. And as they are increasing the use of AI, what they are finding is, and they're really nervous about this, is that these folks that are moving in, the numbers are going to continue to increase, and they don't pay the rent. So they understand that the process is lengthy to get people out, to evict them, and they'll just live there rent-free during the course of the eviction. And then they'll move on to another property and do the same thing. Who do we have, Coleman? Let's go to James. James, you're up. Welcome to the show.
Well, good morning to you, Newell. A couple of weeks ago, Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, or Secretary of War, depends on how you want to look at it, had those generals from all over the world come into Quantico, spoke to them for 45 minutes or so about the warrior ethos, and then he made this comment. He says, frankly, I'm tired of looking out at combat formations, or really any formation, and see fat troops. He, you know, again, started to deride the fatties, say he didn't like the look of it. Well, okay, fat soldiers depends, on the beauty of in the eye of the beholder. But the military does have weight standards, I assume. It also has physical fitness standards. So it's a bad look, they're saying. It's a bad look for the public to see fat soldiers. My question to you, and it's been around for years and years, and you had direct experience with it. From time to time, I've heard people say, looking at TV, scenes of crime in New Orleans, oh, my gosh, look how fat those NOPD cops are. How could they possibly chase a criminal? Well, the same thing, unfortunately, I see, people see, and comments have been made. We also have a bunch of fat sheriff's deputies in the parish. So my question to you is, are there weight standards based on height and that sort of thing, and maybe even jobs? And are there physical fitness standards that these deputies have to meet on an annual basis or whenever they're, you know, the testing might be? So that's the question. Why do we have so many fat deputies and NOPD cops in this area?
Well, let me first address Pete Hegseth's comments. In fact, I did a monologue on it, and I thought it was totally appropriate that he called the generals together. He's the new secretary to the Department of War. I, like him, would much rather look at my executive staff, the leadership of the organization that I was commanding, eye to eye, so that they can read me as to what I'm about to say and the cultural differences that I'm going to bring within an organization and the mindset that I'm going to bring to this organization from this point forward. I think there's real value in doing that. I might not have chosen the same words that Pete Hegseth used. I actually would have been a little bit more blunt as it related to those issues, because if we're going to be war ready, we're not war ready if we're physically out of shape. And if we're going to tell the taxpaying public that we are war ready and we're not, then we are participating in a lie.
So well, let my me comment. My lead up comments were And then my chief concern is...
Look, James, I know you don't like what I just said, so let me finish.
Well, no, I don't mind what you just said. I'm worried about local cops and local sheriff's
deputies. So let me move to that. Yes, there are standards. Yes, there's been any number of laws and court rulings that kind of modified that over the years, and now it has retreated on that issue. We modified the standards at one point in time. We then made them more strict. And what we found was that we had two converging issues. One, we had fewer people that wanted to go into this occupation. And two, they were failing to meet the minimum standards. So as we had, as the vacancy rate that we had and the attrition rate, because we were growing old in a span of about 10 years, we moved from an average age of about 29 to about 36. And as that organization on average grew older, we knew that we were going to have to modify what we were doing. Now, what did we do in the interim? We built two workout facilities on sheriff's office property. We knew that they weren't making a lot of money. It might be cost prohibitive for them to join a health club. So we provided health club facilities to them and encouraged them in our health insurance program with incentives to participate, to get their body mass index down, and to get in better shape. There are a number of people that did it. While I was there, we toyed with having a company physician to be able to access a physician for consultation a lot easier than trying to get into a primary care physician. We were about to embark upon that when I, in fact, decided to retire from the sheriff's office. I'm not sure whether or not they continued forward on that initiative or not. So it's a little bit of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. I, like you, would much rather a leaner, meaner organization, healthier, health insurance costs go down. The pie is only so big. The more money that we saved in health insurance and health insurance costs, the more money I'd be able to put into their pockets. And I preach that daily, that if you treat your body in a bad way, the outcomes are going to be bad. And the costs are going to go up, and the utilization of sick leave and everything else costs the organization money, puts it in a position where you're not able to give back that money in the shape of a pay raise, in the future, because the financial pie was only so big. So I hope that answers your question. Got to get to a break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakenheart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
So, you know, so many people reacting to things in so many different ways. It's absolutely crazy. If you think Hegseth is appropriate for this job, you need serious psychiatric help. That's not what I said. What I said was, is that I agree with what he did. If you're going to be the head of the Department of War and you're going to move that organization in a different direction, I would much rather pull everybody together so that they can read my body language, my face, gain a better understanding of exactly how committed I am to it. And I don't think you get that same flavor on a Zoom. And I would have had other breakout sessions involved as well. I don't know if he did or he didn't, in smaller groups to give them an opportunity to ask me whatever they wanted to ask of me about where we were going to be. I believe that being the secretary to the Department of War is that important. I am not a huge Pete Hegseth fan. That is a huge organization. I think it requires more than just being in the military. You have to have had some experience in running something. Something more than a relatively small not-for-profit. And that's just my mindset. It's just the Pentagon is treated differently in a lot of different ways because of national security, because of intelligence issues. So you have to make sure that you're minding the P's and the Q's and dotting the I's and understand the interconnections, the whips within that organization, how to make them financially sound and otherwise. Contracting is a huge problem in the Department of War. It has been for decades. It requires, I think, a mindset and a skill set outside of the military-industrial complex if you're going to be a little bit of a disruptor in changing the way that things happen there. Look, he's able to articulate a good game. He comes from the media most recently, and he says things in a certain way. I believe that he is true to his belief system. No doubt about that. I don't think he's a phony in that regard. Is he flawed? We're all flawed. I mean, there's no one perfect, right? But I would have, I agreed with the way that he dealt with it. Did you support Austin and Milley? Yes, I did. They provided great military service. The problem here is when you have a president or a secretary that comes in and kind of views the world differently than the traditional manner in which the military views the war, you have a question to ask of oneself as to whether or not you, who is not in charge, is willing to give that view a chance. And if you're not, and you're so embedded in this is the way we've always done it, then you owe it to yourself, you owe it to your country, you owe it to that organization to leave. Because you're there to support the commander in chief. You give your advice. If he doesn't take the advice, you don't go back channel criticizing the president, whoever it may be, or back channel criticizing the Secretary of War. I served as a number two for a long time. I knew there was only one space on the stage. I knew, did we disagree? Absolutely. Did we have knockdown, drag out debates on subjects? Absolutely. But you don't go around infecting and spreading a cancer amongst that organization and the troops, minimizing the leader of the organization. That is not your role. And if you can't find it in yourself to be 100% player, then you owe it to yourself, the organization, and the country that you serve to leave. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radnor, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.